Welcome back to the Live Courageously podcast show in episode 77. The show was on a hiatus as I was producing a feature film last month in May, but it's great to be back. And I have some great guests with me today, so it's a great way to come back. I'm your host, John Duffy, and Live Courageously has been the conscious theme of my life for the last 3 years since the beginning of the pandemic in 2020, and an unconscious theme for most of my life. Courage is resistance to fear. Mastery of fear, not the absence of fear. And there's something contagious about someone who is courageous. So today's show is with two very courageous women, the Perez sisters from Williamsburg, Brooklyn, New York City, New York in the house. They are entrepreneurs, activists, indie media newscasters, podcasters with their Cafecito Break show and much, much more that we'll be exploring. So I'd like to welcome them. And greetings, Rose Angel and Alex. Welcome to Live Courageously. Thank you for joining us.
Woohoo! Thank you for having us. We're very excited to be here.
And we love the title of your show, John. And we love your hat representing the Bronx.
Yes, indeed. And we'll talk about the Bronx later, too. But, you know, I grew up there in the South Bronx and lived 18 years of my life there. So, definitely, that's where I resonate from. But I like to always ask my guests two quick questions. And the first one is, how did we meet? Because most of the people I have on my show are people I've actually met in the real world and not just on social media. So how did we meet?
I love that. I love that you make that distinction because it's true. I think that these days so many people are meeting online, right? In some way or the other. But we met at the last AmpFest in Arizona. My sister and I, we were working for a super PAC that was representing RFK Jr. And so there we were tabling. And all of a sudden, who comes towards our table?
None other than John Duffy of Live Courageously.
Mm-hmm. And little did we know, we would wind up having an amazing conversation with you, clicking immediately with you. And it was just such a treat to have met you at AmpFest.
Yeah, you never know when you're going to meet new friends.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was so cool because I was walking by. I didn't expect to, you know, see your booth. And then, you know, I was listening to you and I was like, okay, these are New Yorkers, Boricua. And I'm like, okay, this is cool. I got to go over and talk to them. And I'm glad I did. And, you know, we got a chance to really, and then you asked me that you wanted to interview me on camera. And I was like, yeah, sure. After a little bit. And that was fun. And I got to know a lot about your background. You know, I asked you a lot of questions at the time and I was like, wow, you know, you have such a great story. And before we get into that story, because I want you to share that story of, you know, all the things that you do, because you got such an amazing energy and range of activities. But I also would like to ask the second question, which was, what does Live Courageously mean to both of you?
That question.
Live Courageously. Well, I think for me is standing in a bold, truthful place, especially in moments where you might be in an environment that may frown upon what you might want to say or convey. Mm-hmm. And many people experience that within their family, right? Or it could be as simple as your parents want you to be the future doctor of America and you have an artist heart and you want to be, you know, pick up the guitar, and there's, you have to be courageous to stand and live your music, which is something that is one of the core foundation messages of our brand, Cafecito Break, is live your music. How are you living your music day to day? And being music, meaning that you are trying your best to be refined like an instrument, because there's a lot of like, when music isn't fine tuned, it can hurt, right? And sometimes in this human dynamic and chaotic world, there's a lot of distortion.
A lot.
There's a lot to unpack there. You put a lot into that little bit of explanation for sure.
For me, it's, well, basically everything you just said, I was just going to express it in a different way. For me, it's really being able to understand and to be able to live not just your life, but create a life in your authenticity. And a lot of it goes hand in hand to what she was saying. When you are living from that place of truth, that will put you in a lot of uncomfortable situations, because the reality is that the moment we're born into this world, something or someone's always trying to tell us what to do, right? Like, and it doesn't always come from a bad place, right? But family's raising you to be a certain way, culture, religion, and it can be very confusing to even understand what your authenticity is. Who are you? Let alone then be able to carry it out. So I feel like part of this process in being able to live courageously is also taking and making the time to understand, like, who are you? Like, who is Alex? Who am I? And always remembering that we're constantly evolving. So, you know, the Alex that I was 5 years ago versus the way I am today, it's like two different women, and being able to adapt accordingly. Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to go even deeper. You know, one of the things I find interesting is the people I meet. I always say, you know, it's almost like there's a reason I meet them and I connect with them. And when I met you, you know, you didn't know my background. I didn't know your background. But when you told me about Williamsburg, I was like, okay, this is fascinating. Because many, many years ago, in another lifetime, when I was a different person, like you're saying, Alex, here's a picture of me with a group in the North Side.
Oh, wow, the fires. The People's Firehouse.
The People's Firehouse. And I was a community and tenant organizer with the People's Firehouse and worked with folks down in Greenpoint, down in Williamsburg. So to connect with, you know, you two from Williamsburg, it just kind of like, it was like a flashback. It took me back to that part of my life that had, you know, passed and, you know, I moved on with, but was good times. It was still good times. And I learned a lot in that experience. But tell us about your lives, because you grew up in Williamsburg. I know Williamsburg, most people don't. It's changed a lot from when I was there doing the stuff I was doing. But tell us a little bit about, you know, your background, your journey, what you did and what takes you to today. So let's go deeper into both of your lives.
I would like to say that there's a further connection with the People's Firehouse, because there is a activist group called Berry Street Alliance, and they do community organizing out of the People's Firehouse. And they've been very active ever since like the Open Streets program happened in, like, for example, New York City, where during 2020, for the sake of social distancing, they opened up certain streets mm-hmm. and blocked it to traffic. And let's just say that through a lot of community organizing efforts and shortcuts, they've been able to permanently close streets that are creating sort of like a chaos mm-hmm. in the neighborhood. So I think it's very interesting. So we keep paying attention to the movements of Berry Street Alliance, because they're starting to just see how some of these woke policies that are being pushed and implemented in our streets sometimes are not really working in day to day. For example, when an emergency vehicle needs to drop mm-hmm. off near there, or when somebody's disabled and they need to be picked up, now you've closed the street to traffic. It's a little example of what connects my sister and I to this neighborhood since we were little peanuts, which we always had a connection to Black parties, elected officials, people, local people being together, moving together in a sense to improve the community and also to celebrate.
That's true.
Yeah, well, when we were there, it was around the founding of it. Another program that I headed up for the People's Firehouse was an arson prevention program, because at that time, arson was a big thing in those neighborhoods, in Williamsburg in particular, yeah. Same as my neighborhood, the South Bronx. And the fire department had a program, Red Caps, which they had arson prevention specialists. And we used to use that to go into the community to organize to prevent arson from burning down buildings. And it was coming from different directions. But like you said, a lot of times people, you know, with the woke stuff, they have good intentions, but intentions don't do anything if they have bad results. And that's the problem. And I think, you know, growing up in the South Bronx, I saw all the years of great intentions that led to the opposite results all the time. And I think that's a little bit of what you're kind of hinting at with, you know, some of the stuff with Berry Street and the closing down. But go ahead, go a little further. Tell us a little bit more about your background and growing up in the neighborhood. And how did you evolve to be entrepreneurs and to be activists? How did you turn into this?
Well, let's go way back to the beginning.
Let's go to the Wayback Machine.
to what Williamsburg was for us. You know, back in the day, Williamsburg was definitely not a neighborhood that was as known. And
This was everywhere.
It was mostly Puerto Rican and Black community, at least at this particular part of the neighborhood. Of course, we were surrounded by Polish, Italian, Hasidic. So it was almost like very definitive lines about
in terms of where.
And people that did know of your neighborhood or did recognize the name usually associated that name with negative things. You know, I mean, I remember being in high school and when people would ask me, hey, where are you from? And I'm like, oh, I'm from Williamsburg. They're like, oh, are you always ducking bullets and stuff? Mm-hmm. You know, and so, you know, fast forward to today where it's been so gentrified and mm-hmm. It's almost like night and day, but we did grow up in this community and yes, it was pretty poor. And yes, it didn't have the best aspects in terms of, you know, there was definitely gangs and there was definitely crime and drugs. But there was also a lot of family. Mm-hmm. There was also a lot of community. And when you know a space to be your home, you don't know anything to compare it to. So you love your home. And we loved growing up in Williamsburg and we were so blessed to actually have experienced Williamsburg during a time where community was actually so tight and where families were that type of those family and community was prioritized differently than maybe what you see today. Everybody knew each other.
And also our family members, just so you could understand where the entrepreneur part comes, our uncles and our father, they were entrepreneurs. They had little businesses. And so we saw our dad, even though he was an on and off welder, but there were certain seasons where he had a couple of businesses. I think maybe three that I remember.
Yeah.
And our uncle too. Our uncle always had bodegas, right? And mm-hmm. so we grew up seeing our relatives try their hand at entrepreneurship, even though we didn't quite understand it. And even though there wasn't like this roadmap, like, hey, daughter or hey, niece, when you grow up, you might want to be an entrepreneur, look into being mm-hmm. Those conversations never happened.
Never.
We were still having those conversations of save your money and put it under the mattress.
Yes, correct. And also, just so you know, we are first generation born here. So our parents did migrate here from Puerto Rico.
Well, it's kind of fascinating because what you're saying, the things you're saying, because I grew up, my family emigrated from Ireland. So I'm first generation American.
Oh, okay.
Well, and the neighborhood I grew up in the South Bronx, when I grew up, we were the only Irish American family. All my friends were Puerto Rican and Black. That was so I was like the outsider, but not for long. I mean, I quickly adapted to everything. And like you mentioned, last weekend was the Puerto Rican parade. Which to me as a kid, the two best parades was the Irish parade and the Puerto Rican parade. Those were without a doubt the New York's greatest parades. So I grew up in that thing. I mean, like you said, it was community. I mean, it was a poor neighborhood in the Bronx, South Bronx, but we had friends, we had family, mm-hmm. everybody looked out for each other. So, you know, when you look back on it, I look back on my life and I dropped out of high school when I was 15, you know, but I say, you know, I was lucky because I had all these great friends and all these great people that made me who I am. So people who don't live in it don't understand there's that side, not just the negative side. There's all the positive side as well that you experienced growing up before the neighborhood changed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it helps you build resilience because you experience all of those difficult moments. Every day in those settings is truly an adventure. And unfortunately, the circumstances of all the migration that we've had, that we've been unprepared to receive in New York in the last few years, has kind of given a vibe of that time, with the exception of the community lookout. You could be falling in the street and people will walk over you or record you first. Somebody could be beating you up. People will be record you first and maybe think about calling someone to help you.
Maybe.
They might forget.
Wow. That's the difference between today and yesterday. And I say yesterday, yesterdays, right?
Right.
You know, because in those days, it wasn't like that. You had that. You had the lookout. You had the people taking care of each other. You had, you know, and everywhere, everybody kind of knew each other. You know, you played street games together. There was more of a sense of community. And that's definitely missing today. You know, I want to get into your, and there's so much to cover, and I'm going to do my best to cover as much of it because you've done so much, but your, you know, entrepreneurial stuff, maybe start there. And then we're going to jump into the activism, you know, that led you to both that me meeting you at that RFK PAC, and also your work dealing with the COVID and the vaccine mandates and all the stuff that you did in New York around that. There's just so much to hear about from the two of you. But, you know, start a little bit with the entrepreneurial stuff and then we'll pivot to the activism stuff.
I mean, there is so much to unpack. I think that a pivotal moment was when our dad passed away. A few years before he passed away, he would hear my sister and I think my sister and I, we didn't realize we were already beginning our entrepreneur journey, but like the pre-me stage before you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. we always had a fascination with learning, right? So as even though we may have been in different settings and different paths, because there were a lot of like different moments where we were not really in parallel, but we always were learning. So maybe we'd go to the to learn have a course on aromatherapy or herbalism, and my father would hear that those conversations. Our father was a big dreamer, so one day he said, when are we gonna open a botanica, which, you know, is like the name of the old school spots that people would go for like spiritual, like consults. Mm-hmm. So when we had an opportunity, he had already passed at this point, to have a tiny business in Williamsburg. We named it Botanica, but with the L, Botanical, botanical, the L we added for love, because we wanted to keep and sort of like honor the idea of having a place to go for spiritual wisdom, but we wanted to create it in the way that felt organic for us. Mm-hmm. And all of it was rooted in the fact that my sister and I knew that we grew up in this amazing time where people knew how to care for each other lovingly and look out in a community setting. And we were witnessing a loss of that. And we knew that we were lucky enough to have each other and our friends. And we kept meeting people in the city from all ages who were so lonely. Yeah. And we're talking about, this is what, like after 2009, because yeah, our dad died in 2009.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot. So I would say it was most definitely rooted in this passion of understanding that there was this need that needed to be met, and we wanted to definitely be a part of that. And that was people do need community, and it needs to exist from a variety of different components. At that point in our life, when we were focused in more of a spiritual, we were more spiritually focused, our space attracted a lot of people kind of going through those transformations. And as we all know, it doesn't matter what transformation you're going through. Usually when you're going through deep transformation, it can be such a lonely experience. And a lot of what you go through, you have to do on your own, right? It's your inner journey. However, we also understood the importance of what it's like when you have people in your life that can be that ear or be that foundation for you, or even mentorship in some capacity or the other. So, you know, those were kind of our initial roots in terms of our brick and mortar. And we were there within the space for about 9 years.
Wow.
And we unfortunately, you know, being a small business anywhere has its challenges. And even more so in a place like the city, New York City, which is so expensive. But at the end of the day, COVID years really just, you know, was that last, you know, really did us in, and we had to close, which was an incredibly bittersweet experience for us because we were like, wow, during a time where people are so isolated, so lonely, so overwhelmed, there's this chronic mental disease mm-hmm. happening all over the world.
And people are looking, connection.
Exactly, more than ever. And now a physical brick and mortar has to close down. It was not an easy thing for us to accept that. At that point, well,
you know, having done it, like you said, for 9 years, 10 years. And I remember a good friend of mine growing up, his mother had a botanica in East Harlem. Oh, wow. And I remember she used to make the statues in their basement apartment, you know, and we used to watch her, like, you know, do the making of some of the statues and creating some of the product that she would have in her botanica. And so it was, you know, and she was like someone where people would come to, like you're saying, for connection, for, you know, spiritualism, something to give them something to believe in, some hope, something positive, you know, and it meant so much to a lot of people in the neighborhood who were going through stuff. So, you know, I can relate to hearing that, what you're saying. So when you had to close and you had to make that change, how did you deal with, you know, obviously it was affected you, because at a time that it was needed more than ever, you had to not do it. And so then what did you do, the two of you? How did you transition? How did you get involved in all the stuff that you did get involved in? Why? What was your beliefs about it that got you to pivot into who you are and what you've been doing for the last couple of years?
Well, we've been wearing double hats and in double industries for a while, because what we omitted in the beginning to mention is that at one point in another life, my sister was working at VH1 Save the Music, and I was working at VH1 Networks. And during 2001, 9/11, the scary day of our lives, where my sister and I lost each other. We were in that building. You know, those moments you never forget. But media and medium being in the middle, right? Everything about our life, down to even our skin color, you know, even the harmony of our skin colors, just our textures, like there's always an invitation, even in our sisterhood, to always sort of a lot of people find themselves so easy to be in a certain cup. If you're like this, that means you need to look like this and think like this and act like this, etc. And my sister and I, just by our nature and our relationship, there are many times that became sort of like, this doesn't make sense. We need to explore it more. So I think we've always had this curious heart. At one point, I think we were both interested in maybe exploring a political path, but we realized it was really dirty. And I've always enjoyed the medium of communication, of telling a story, of television. And at MTV, I worked at MTV and also BET Networks, and I was a line producer. So we would write show productions, and I worked and supervised.
Just like I do. So line producing. Wow, that's cool.
But not for film, right? I know it's a little bit more involved. Yeah, with film, different. It's very, I respect it. Someone one time asked me to look, would you consider being a line producer for a small film? And I was like, oh, heck no. I'll stick to the TV world. Thank you very much. So I respect your work, sir. But at the same time, while we were giving birth to our brick and mortar botanical, Cafecito Break was also born. So that would, because we were like, okay, this is our little shop, but where are we going to go and have community events? Where are we going to go and have speaker series? So we were first birthed at 2011, Cafecito Break, and it was community events. Yep, Cafecito Break, Unidos Somos Más Fuerte, which means united we are stronger. And those shirts were actually the idea of those shirts was, we were trying to march in last year's South Sunset Brooklyn Parade, Puerto Rican Brooklyn Parade. And when we applied, We got accepted, and then the person did a little bit more digging and saw our Substack, and I guess read medical freedom and intuited that to mean Trump. And we got rejected from a small parade being like, sorry, this is not a Trump rally. And so we made those shirts. Yeah, like cancel culture. And that's what, unfortunately, one of the things that we do advocate here in New York City, because New York City is really blue. And when you're Puerto Rican, a lot of people want to put you in the democratic socialist thinking cap, and we're not like that. We ask questions, and that intersection of having people come to you from all sorts of life and trusting you with their innermost conversations, and now you have clear windows as to what's happening in your neighborhood. And then when we were go and report and cover local events, we're getting sometimes an exact match as to what we're hearing very privately. Yeah. And many of those times is when you see us pushing a certain topic on our platform because we feel like God is asking us to cover it. And many times those are uncomfortable situations, conversations, and they have gotten us canceled. It has meant less work. We don't get contracted to work. Any nonprofit connection that we used to get for like freelance gigs, we don't get those phone calls anymore. And it's living courageously and learning. I guess we're learning a new map. It's a new roadway because we don't know where this is going. We just know that no matter how hard the road gets, we rather live in this sacrifice than betray ourselves and our hearts and our souls and the name of our family legacy. I mean, there's just so much here.
Yeah.
Well, I know Alex mentioned early on in the conversation about, you know, how you are different 5 years today from 5 years ago, you know, and I identify, you know, because I'm going to ask you some questions about that. But like when I was growing up in the Bronx, you know, it was a time of protest. It was a time of radicalism. You know, I was hanging out with the Black Panthers and the Young Lords Party and protesting for Puerto Rican independence and doing all that stuff. So that was part of my identity back then. I was a socialist. I was a communist. You know, I went down that path for many, many years until I shifted. And then all of a sudden I had, you know, all of a sudden I would call it some wake up calls. And I started to reanalyze what I believed and why I believed it. And I changed. And, you know, who I am today is a lot different who I was at that point in my life. But, you know, one of the things you say here, which is, you know, free thinkers, you know, and that I think is something that, you know, identifies, I think, to be powerful, to be a free thinker, to be willing to not necessarily go along with what everybody else in your tribe, your community, your crowd goes along with, and you're willing to think for yourself is powerful if you're willing to do it. You know, it takes bravery. And it isn't easy, but that's what I saw in both of you when I met you that time, was that energy, that courage. And that's kind of why I was like, wow, these two sisters are cool. They're really cool. So that's kind of why I wanted to have you on so bad. But tell us a little bit about that. You know, I mean, why do you think you were, you know, able to stand and think differently and, you know, be willing to, you know, go against the tide when the tide was going in the opposite direction, especially with the whole COVID mentality?
Well, you know, to give kind of go back a little bit, you know, we were raised in a predominantly Democratic family, as most Puerto Ricans tend to be, and community. But being young, I would say definitely one of the elements that affected or influenced how we thought or how comfortable we started to become within the world of politics or just learning to step back and look at things differently was that we had relatives that were very active politically, and they would kind of take a few of the of their nieces or nephews under their wing and, you know, take them to these political events. So we grew up around local elected officials and a lot of these political environments. And little by little, like there's a few things that happen within these worlds. Like one, you learn to have a comfort within these worlds. You know, you learn to feel like you're not as outside of it as you may feel as some people may feel if they're not active politically. Some people just don't see how they can connect, or they don't really see themselves within these worlds. But when you are in these worlds, you also start to understand little by little. Obviously, when you're young, you don't see the full picture. But over time, you start to see things from different perspectives. You start to see the patterns and understand them a little bit better. You start to see the corruption, you know, a little bit of everything. And so essentially, you know, our relatives really sort of seeded us within these worlds. And individually, even though, like my sister had said, there were the times in our life where we literally went down different paths, but we were both very active politically, like college, you know, afterwards, but in different areas. And honestly, experience was another major, you know, teaching tool, because every world that you went into, you had to understand the way that chessboard is played. And little by little, you start to understand that, you know, yeah, there are rhythms and patterns to things, usually rhythms and patterns to people. But the more worlds and communities that you tend to be a part of, the more your perspectives grow and the more your awareness as well grows. And I feel that another blessing that we had is that we not only were, you know, invited to different worlds, but we sought out different worlds and communities, just even based off of interest, right? Things that we were interested in. And within all of these worlds, just learning different ways of thinking, different schools of thought, and being open to it. I think part of it, to be honest, it's we have some particular wiring that we were born with, because when we look at our family, we're like, sometimes we're like, how come we think like this? Because I will tell you, John, we have a younger brother who's a whole other generation from us. He's like, he was the surprise baby. And he's very similar. Just the way he thinks in his way he looks at everything, the way so smoothly can just sort of step back and not get lost in the sauce. And so I think also part of it is genetic in some way. We don't know who we get it from specifically,
but there but there were certain things like to sort of like narrow down and get to the question about why we ended up let's say advocating for freedom and medical freedom specifically, is also based on just our lifestyle. My sister was going through all the vaccine conversations with her children in school and all of those things and all of those conversations that it brought up. I would learn as a DT by default. Then as we were going through our podcast, one thing that I forgot to mention, because you know we're all wearing so many hats here, is that we picked up in our learnings different certifications so that when we meet with people, we would be able to reach into different skill sets. So maybe my sister, you know, we studied Reiki, we studied a little sound healing, we studied herbalism. I got certified as a holistic health coach. That's the intersection where you start learning about vaccines and vaccine health and all these questionable ingredients. So because our podcast was already, we started our podcast in 2012, Cafecito Break, and the woman that I was hosting it with from Texas, she was a big advocate, also big mama bear like my sister, about what's going on in these with our children, what's going on with these autism rates. And of course then these great documentaries that have been put out there little by little, we didn't realize is that we would be watching some of these documentaries of people that we would end up working around when the world went dark in 2020.
Yep. Because John, if I tell you the truth, the first time that I had ever really stopped to look at RFK Jr., you know, to really hear what he was saying, was when my children were younger and I was knee deep in this, you know, it was so overwhelming, because here I'm thinking, well, they're my children. Shouldn't I decide what they should not put into their body? And all of a sudden the schools were like, well, no, you can't decide. We decide for you. And I was having such a tantrum to this day. It just gets me so mad, you know, because everything in my body, all my cells were like, this is not okay, this is not normal. But here, this was here was RFK Jr. He would come out and always, you know, he was so inquisitive. He was sharing these other perspectives, and of course, also heavily censored. But that was the first introduction I ever had to him. Little did we know, right, that all these years later would sort of circle back in these capacities, and that a lot of what he was talking about already would come to the limelight in ways that, you know, back then we couldn't imagine that they would have, because as we all know, these areas, these topics, even to this day, are still so polarized. So yeah. Back then, even more. And it's almost humbling. You sort of kick back and you're like, wow.
So yeah, so now we're over here getting censored because we're challenging our community members. Like, come on, do you really want to throw away Goya products? This is suspicious to me that all of a sudden now you want to throw away Goya products and it's a pandemic. How right. come you didn't, you know, have this great idea about advocating alternative Goya products before? Maybe some of you have Trump derangement syndrome. Oh, why did we say that? That was like, what? To this day, people were like, they would celebrate every single time that Instagram took down our channel. And why was Instagram taking down our channels? Because as we explained for so long, we love our community and we've been around the politicians. So obviously when you start creating stuff, you start creating things that you are familiar with. So a lot of our conversations and things that we cover about Cafecito Break really comes down to what's happening right in front of you.
Yeah.
And why? Because there's a lot of simple things that are getting in the way of having the most amazing relationship you can with another human being. Yeah. And those things that get in the way, when, you know, sometimes people are so afraid to come out of their box a little bit and explore. You know, for us, it was a beautiful experience for American values to trust us to go to AmFest, which was, you know, is considered like the unofficial almost RNC, right? And a big Trump
conservative values.
Yeah, and it's like all Trump, and people who knew that we were going to take this trip, they were looking at us like, are you crazy? Like,
why?
And in my mind, I'm like, but isn't this the message of RFK? He's challenging us, the Americans. So to be in these different places and be okay with being in what would be quote unquote contrast settings. Now, one of the things that came out as an epiphany for some people when that trip manifested is that a surprise was that we had such a successful time at AmFest, right? And I think it's because people want to have more conversation. Unfortunately, we don't think that if we did that same thing at a Democratic anything, I don't think that we would have that same sort of welcoming, that same sort of reception, that same sort of greeting. I mean, we've been at bars and we've gotten frozen out by people who even see a little hat. Oh, you're voting for that quack? And I'm like, nobody is saying anything. I'm supporting the fact that he's running for president because he has a lot of things that I think the American public could benefit from hearing.
Well, I'm going to jump on a bunch of those things real quick with you. It's just so much to cover because, you know, like RFK, for example, you know, just put that picture up when we met there. And you obviously, you know, I read his book, Fauci. I run into him at Gold's Gym in Venice. I work out there. So I run into him. So I talk to him, you know, so I have, you know, I've had a chance to, you know, have short conversations with him. But, you know, one of the things that is, you mentioned earlier about being learners, you were both learners. And I think that's part of the fact that you question and think that unfortunately a lot of people don't. And a lot of people are, you know, I couldn't believe it because I've always been into health and fitness. And when COVID hit, I just saw all these people become totally afraid, just total fear. And everybody who used to be doing all kinds of brave things now were like locking themselves in their house and not coming out and just totally living in fear. And I rejected it at the time. And luckily I had went to a motivational event right before it hit called Unstoppable. And we were all like-minded people. And we're like, this ain't stopping us. We're going to go out there even stronger into the world. We're not going to, you know, let this virus, you know, can we get the virus? Yes. Is it real? Yes. Can we get sick? Yes. But so what? That should not stop us from living. Mm-hmm. You know, that shouldn't prevent you from being brave. So that's kind of what we did. And that's kind of what you did. But, you know, and it just blew my mind because when, you know, I was on the left and 9/11 changed me. And then I look at people and they're just afraid to have conversations with people who disagree with them on anything. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, that's just pure cowardice in my opinion, because I can talk to anybody no matter what their position, left, green, right, conservative, libertarian, who cares? You know, you got a different opinion. Let's have a conversation. Let me see what I can learn, and let's treat each other with respect. What's so hard about that? But people can't do that anymore. They just can't do it. Or so many people. I can't say people can. A lot of people can't. There's a whole group of people that can, and those are the ones that, you know, the circles we want to be in, I believe, and that you're in, is that we're brave enough to have those conversations. Come on, bring it on. What's the fear?
Let's do it. Yeah, 100%. It's sad. It almost feels like it's becoming this lost art, you know.
And it's so much fun because you never know what world and adventure can open up when you allow yourself to meet someone mm-hmm. that you may never meet in any other setting. And for me, it's like, I'm like, listen, I'm not trying to go on the next vacation with you. We're just having a little friendly chat. Like some people feel like, I don't know, why are they so scared to even say hello?
Oh my goodness.
Look, we were laughing the other day. I mean, people are even sensitive about looks. The other day I went to my favorite pizza spot and I was just looking off to this, to just, you know, when you're like staring off into space, but I was actually in line of sight of somebody, a young person who was, I guess, sitting down. And all of a sudden I noticed by the corner of my eye, he pops up and then he starts having like a tantrum. And then I look at him and he's motioning to me like, why the heck am I just staring at him?
Hmm.
Like it interrupted his pizza eating experience. And he started having a meltdown towards me, but I wasn't even looking at him. I didn't even realize that he was in front of me until he started motioning. But this is how sensitive people are. And that's, unfortunately, that's a thing these days where people put people on video who think they're looking at them.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned that. Wow, it's just so funny because yesterday I was walking in Santa Monica and I'm walking past this guy and I look at everybody, right? I look at him for a second and he goes, what are you looking at? You know, part of my Bronx was to respond like, I ain't looking at you, you know, to come storm at him, right? But you know, I just kind of like shook my head and I was like, oh my God, what is happening? The mental illness that are affecting people, you know, because if somebody looked at me, I'd be like, fine, hey, you know, that's cool. But something's happening and has happened to people mm-hmm. because of the isolation, because of mental illness that's been created by all the propaganda, that people are walking around, you know, unlike they used to be. And it's sad. It's just really sad to see because you go, man, you know, you almost go, what's going on in your life that you have to be like that? It's just wrong. You know, it's horrible. But
it literally feels like a new set of humans have emerged. And you're coexisting on the same planet and you're sort of feeling like a little bit more like, I don't know, like you're in your norm, but then all of a sudden you're surrounded by folks that are just wired so differently now, even just down to their mannerisms. People are having a harder time looking at you in the eye. You all are saying now, great examples of you can't even, God forbid, your eyes meet, you know.
That's a trigger now.
Conversation, even just the spacing. I mean, the truth is that, and I kind of feel like a lot of these things were being seeded even before COVID, in especially with the onset of like social media and more of a digitized world. I feel like we were already sort of being shifted into more of an isolation, independent space. But definitely those COVID years really just, you know, it was such a concentrated experience for so people. And especially, like you said, John, people that were so afraid And they got it, you know, honestly feels like we woke up and half the world was hypnotized, because I couldn't understand why everyone around the world all of a sudden were sounding, behaving in the same ways. Yeah, like you never see them. You never see that, you know, like we adapt to our ecosystem, right? Our neighborhoods, our community. You never see behaviors and patterns be exactly the same across the board worldwide. That was so unnatural. So much of what we've all lived and witnessed has been unnatural. In what capacities and to what levels, we may never truly know.
Yeah, but it felt demonic sometimes. Yeah,
but you got to trust yourself.
I like you said. I think that's a good word. Hypnotized. It was a like global hypnotism that was mind-boggling, because you know I live in an area, Santa Monica, where, you know, people were like, not, they've been into natural health all their life. They wouldn't eat anything that was unnatural. They wouldn't take anything that was unnatural. Then overnight, they went from that to the opposite. And it was like, now they were true believers in big pharma. Give me the needle and give me more needles and give me more needles. And you're going, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, if before I ate something unnatural, you would have been screaming at me. Mm-hmm. And now you're the opposite person, total opposite person overnight.
It makes no sense. We're still trying to figure it out. I mean, it definitely has been the great 2020 awakening when you look back, because mm-hmm. being grounded woke a lot of people up to what we were maybe too busy to look at.
Yeah.
Right. Now there's no excuses. A lot of parents woke up to how the educational system maybe is not as effective as they think that it could, when they would see what their children were learning, what they were being subjected mm-hmm. to through online, what agendas, right? Some of the young kids that we know, because their curriculum was so one way, the young kids would find themselves sometimes talking to us mm-hmm. because they wanted to feel they could be in the presence of an adult, somebody maybe with a little more insight, that was not going to make them feel like a piece of crap because they had a question, because maybe they weren't buying into why Joe Biden is the greatest thing since the creation of human beings when he was running for president, for example, or why AOC, you know, why didn't everybody like AOC, you know, for example, like what's going on with you? You're jealous. Like it was the most ridiculous things. Now, one of the most alarming moments for me during that time was to witness, I you know how they have, there's local community board meetings everywhere.
Uh-huh.
So mm-hmm. we went to one. And, you know, for those who may have never visited a community board meeting, that's your local elected officials, your business people, your nonprofit movements, and people and concerned neighbors, sometimes a new proposals coming up, anything that's happening with your neighborhood within that part section. So anyway, I go to the meeting, the Brooklyn board president is there, elected officials are there. Every single person in this meeting is masked. And we already knew, we already had enough information about this. But there was one lady in this auditorium filled with movers and shakers who, if she saw your little nose, she would get on her mic and she would scream at you like if you were in kindergarten. And for me, that was a nightmare wake-up call, because I'm like, these are the people who are in rooms together supporting and creating policy together. Mm-hmm. And we're talking to a lot of community members that are telling us all the time, who is our local elected officials? They don't listen to me. But as my sister communicated earlier, it's a two-way street. You know, part of this that many Americans are learning the hard way is you have to be a little active, or you have to know a little bit more about what's going on in the community. And we've all gotten a bit too comfortable trusting who we thought were going to create policy that was going to be for the better health of our communities, and the taxpaying population.
And coming to the very scary reality that a lot of the reality is that a lot of our elected officials in specific areas actually know less than you sometimes.
Yeah.
And so there they are making these, you know, decisions that will affect the fabric of your life within that community. And they're making it based off what, you know, who's providing you the information to base it? Are you even qualified enough to ask the appropriate questions? Do you even know what questions to ask? Are you bringing in a variety of different perspectives? You know, none of that is happening.
Most of it has been hijacked by some sort of wokeism. I feel like when we visit these offices, you see more of a representation of what diversity is supposed to look at like, but we don't really see that practice, and we don't feel like they really do speak to all of their constituents. It's almost like it's un-American.
Well, I go to two gyms, and you like it's 2024. I go to Gold's Gym and I go to 24 Hour Fitness in Santa Monica. And in 24 Hour Fitness, like the other day, so many people have masks on. And I was just like, you're in the gym in 2024 exercising and you're still wearing a mask. And it gets back to that word hypnotized. You got to be hypnotized because if you did any research, any logical thinking, you would realize that it makes no sense. It doesn't work. It doesn't protect you. It's totally useless. If anything, it's counterproductive. And if you're exercising, it's probably worse for you. So all the negatives of it and no positives, and you're still doing it anyway. And you go, but when people get hypnotized, they stay hypnotized unless someone breaks them out of the hypnotism. But you know, the good side is that in negatives come good. You talked about 9/11. That was a horrible moment in our lives, but good came out of that. And I think, like you say, people getting active now and realizing that they got to take control of the school, their community, their family, not let it up to the politicians and the people who supposedly look out for your interests, but really don't. They just look out for themselves. And so it's leading to people like yourself and others doing that, which is the good side. The hard thing is, like, I think in you, like you said, with your botanica, I have an L at the end, remembering. You know, I have to remember, too, it's like trying to keep that word of love in. And, you know, and sometimes, especially with people we disagree with, finding a way to still, you know, remember to love, not lose that, you know, because it's so easy to be put into that reality that we tend to act the way everybody else is acting. And we shouldn't. We got to remember that we have to have that. We got to come with love, even when it's harder, even when it's hardest. You know, if we can do that, you know, we can make an impact by our example. And I think that's what both of you have been doing, what you're doing in all the ways you're doing it.
And you know, it's really, thank you so much. It's really about going back to simple.
Yeah.
And the way we updated our business when we had the Botanica is, you know, we didn't feel called to working in the ways that others have in the past. And our language was really like the earth medicine, the plants, the crystals. And that's what we had in our store. And really what we would do, sometimes we would have a small plate of like crystal quartz or rose quartz. And there you look at them, and they're all slightly different. Some of them a little lighter, some of them a little darker. Some of them have rougher edges, smoother. And we would tell people like, okay, this might be your family. You see, they're all a little bit different. You might be from the same family, but everybody has different attributes. And some people are maybe more rough around the edges. Some people are smoother. Some people are lighter, darker, happier, brighter. But embrace your uniqueness. You know, this is sort of like a reflection that God makes beautiful things. And how are you taking and looking out for yourself at this moment? What is it that you need? What is it that you're longing for? And look, my sister and I are happy to report that we witnessed many people meet the moments that they were looking for. Somebody wanted to move, all of a sudden they're like, sorry, I'm not gonna see you again because I'm living in New Jersey, or I'm moving to Berlin, or guess what, I got the new job. And we heard that time and time and time and time again. And when you think back, I mean, when someone shares with you some of their most amazing moments. Like, we have botanical babies. We have women and men that we've met that were about to, you know, create a child, and then they created the child and it was in the oven, and all of a sudden it comes out and we're like, this is a botanical baby. Come meet your titis.
It was a really blessed experience for us. Yeah. We would always joke that botanical was an apprenticeship for us too, because, you know, it's like, you know, you experience it all, the good, the bad, the ugly, because life is a little bit of everything.
That's right.
And so it's like part of transformation, part of healing is being able to say, hey, I do got to look at these parts that are not easy. I do got to face these things that scare me. But, you know, when I do, I am gaining all this beauty. I am gaining all this, you know, courage. I am gaining, you know, a peace. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for us, we were always very passionate about trying to find the ways to connect with people universally. So it doesn't matter what brought you into the shop, what triggered that moment for that person to walk in. At the end of the day, we really wanted to meet you and find, like, universally, hey, how do we connect? We're all so different from all walks of life, but the reality is we're also very alike. And, you know, when we span it out in the way we're looking at our country right now, we have become so incredibly polarized in this country. But, you know, I feel like part of our healing process needs to be that we got to start reminding each other how alike we really are. Mm-hmm. You know, most of us, you know, like, we all want to be healthy. We all want happiness. We all want to go buy food that we could afford. You know, we all want to have community. Yeah. You know, we want to have schools that feel great, safe streets. Like, if we really start to go down the list of the things that we probably all have in common, it's probably way bigger than the ones that are not. But that has been, you know, through media and through, you know, so many mechanisms, it has been communicated to be the opposite. But part of the healing that needs to happen is, hey, you know, the reality is, yes, there's so much work to do from so many angles, but there's so much beauty within all of us. And there's so much that we have in common. And when we could just tap into that, we can move forward. Like, I'm hopeful.
Well, I'm optimistic too. I mean, I know, you know, we're divided, and there is a constant attempt to divide further because the media does it, the media pushes it, and people in power push it. People in power all over the world push it, you know, and it's not just, you know, left versus right, because, you know, you said average folks have more in common than differences. Yeah, we disagree on this and that. I may be a business person, you're an actor, mm-hmm. you're an artist, you play music, I work in a bank, whatever the things are, we're different, but we have a lot in common. We got families, we got communities, we got, you know, we want to make a better life for ourselves and our families. All that is in common. What do we disagree on? Well, we disagree on stuff. So what? You know, that's fine too. Disagree.
Mm-hmm, right.
You know? But, you know, there's people in power who, you know, if there's a division, I see it's the people in power throughout the world versus the majority of the people in the world.
Yes.
And
the
average person, that's who we got to unite with. The people in power, they're out for their interests, their power, their money. And at the end of the day, you know, they want us to behave a certain way for our interests, they don't care about us, for mm-hmm. their interests, their power, and the continuation
Absolutely.
Of what they do. Those yeah. are the ones. And it's a small group of people when you take it down to numbers. They're a small group of people. The majority of the people is the majority. And so hopefully we can find a way to communicate with each other and, you know, whether we back this, you know, like, you know, you were, I mean, up in here, I'm going to put a picture up in my neighborhood, the Crotona Pool. I was from Mott Haven down below. I used to go swimming up in Crotona Pool where they had the rally now for Trump up there. And you guys were up there, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't care who you like or don't like. You love Trump. You don't like Trump. You love Robert Kennedy. You don't like Robert Kennedy. You like Biden. You don't like Biden. You know, the point is being able to express yourselves wherever it is. And it was great for me as a South Bronx guy to see my neighborhood, my hood, come out and express an opinion, their beliefs, what they feel, right? And not be afraid to do that anymore. What's yeah. wrong with that? What's yeah. wrong with that?
And listen, it felt yeah. great. Oh, it felt great. And hashtag, it's not a cult. A lot of people yes. like to dismiss that, but I think that, you know, a lot of people also searching for connection, and people are feeling lonely, and people just want to be in spaces where they don't feel like they have to answer 1,000 questions just to maybe be allowed in.
Or that they feel that they have to be in some sort of survival mode because they need, they just want to feel comfortable. They want to feel connection. And, you know, that Bronx experience was full of a lot of that. If I tell you the truth, that overall, my favorite part was the energy of the people.
Amen.
And the conversations and just how good people felt. It was,
Let's have more of that.
Yes.
You know, there's a Bob Dylan song that I always quote. It's something is happening here. You don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones? And something is happening. That was an example of something's happening that people don't know. You know, they think they know what's going on, but people are changing. People are experimenting. People are thinking for themselves. People are coming up with, you know, feeling. And that's, you know, that's a good thing. Back in the 60s, when we were on the left, we used to say question authority. Nowadays, people forgot that. Why not? Mm-hmm. Why can't we question authority? Why can't we question doctors and scientists and teachers and everybody else? That's a good thing to question. It's a good thing to think. Why are people afraid to do it now? They weren't it back then. Why are they afraid of it now?
Right.
You know, what's the danger? You're gonna be able to think for yourself. Wow, that's it? That's scary? Come on now.
I know they're going after hate speech now, and some people get surprise visits by cops for making memes and stuff like that.
Insanity.
And we make memes, so we hope that we're not on any lists.
but I think we got to encourage that to have that spirit, that bravery. I always was a rebel. I was a rebel when I was on the left. Now I'm on the right. I'm still a rebel. I'm just that person who always questions. Tell me, let's do this. I'm going to go, well, maybe, but why? You know, right. Like, I'm going to ask that why question. You know, and then maybe I'll agree with you. I'll say,
I love it because it gives me, some people, ask me, like, do you feel like you're wasting your time? You know, like, why are you even, being involved in these community efforts? Things are the way they are. The control system is the way that it is. In my mind, I'm like, if I don't wake up and have anything to live for or look for or have a purpose, what am I going to do? Be like a plop at home? Like, look, even if this is a crazy dream and I can't do anything about it, I'm still going to enjoy myself as much as I can with the people that are here on this planet with me.
And we're going to continue trying to effect change.
Amen.
You know, you can't, you gotta have that dedication and commitment as well. It's worth it. You know, yourself is worth it. The people you love, community, your home, it's worth it.
Yeah, well, I could speak with you for hours, for sure. We could go for hours. We're kind of at that hour point already, 1 hour. So I would like you to kind of sum up anything you want to say, how people can contact you. I'm putting up your Cafecito Break at .org. It's also on X. You're on Facebook. You're on Instagram. You're everywhere. I would recommend people come check out your stuff. Check out your podcast. Check out all the amazing stuff that you're doing. But let me let you guys close and tell us anything you would like to share with us as we wrap up. And once again, I've really enjoyed it, and I could talk for hours with you, and we haven't even began to touch the surface. So,
well, hopefully this is just part one of many conversations to come. Thank you to you and your audience for extending this beautiful, warm invitation to the Perez sisters. You can find us everywhere on Cafecito Break. Cafecito Break is really where we're reporting boots on the ground stuff, things that are happening in New York, things that have to do with medical freedom, freedom censorship. We also do have a brand new YouTube channel called Crystal Sage Wisdom. And I think that's sort of like our botanical 2.0.
Yeah.
And which we talk about the inner journey. And we have sister conversations outside in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, like in a different cafe every week that we produce it.
Listen, it's in our nature to want to connect with people. And my sister and I have been, every single time we meet someone, we're always like, you're part of the family. So, thank you so much to the Live Courageous family, to you, John. We've had an amazing time getting to know each other better. And we look forward to the next one.
Maybe I'll be in New York. I'll come to Williamsburg and get to see you out there.
And we'll do a boots on the ground live Cafecito Break.
That's right, a live one.
I love
That'd
it.
That'd be nice.
And if you ever need me to come on your show, I'd love to do it, of course. And You know,
once we got to arrange that for sure.
I would love it. I love it. But it was great talking to you. I'm so, you know, God puts people in my life, and obviously meeting you that day was another example of that. So I feel grateful and blessed that I had a chance to come across you and connect with you. It was a good day. It was a really good day.
We feel the same. God bless you. God bless you.
God bless you and your audience. Thank you.
And best with everything you're doing. And we'll be in touch. And I'm going to close out the show. Thank you so much.
Ciao.
All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed the Prayer Sisters and they inspired you. They made you be a free thinker, made you, you know, realize that there's so much that you can do and it's on you to take responsibility to create a better life. So check them out. Check them out on their page, cafecitobreak.org, and follow up with them. And until next time, you can check out all my podcast shows on live-courageously.org or Live Courageously on YouTube, and check out all the 76 shows that I've done. And once again, thank you, everybody. Until I see you next, make your life a masterpiece, and God bless.